You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Blue Moon. You saw me.
Good evening and welcome to the Man City Show. Spencer Debson back in the chair and with a smile on my face to tell everyone that, of course, City are now club world champions. And we've now won five trophies in 2023, an unprecedented achievement never achieved before by an English club. We are now Premier League, Champions League, FA Cup, Super Cup and club world champions. Winners after a resounding 4-0 win against Fluminese. And of course, it could have been six if we'd won the Community Shield and there hadn't been some extra time. But are we top of the world or are we? Is this just a moment in time? Because before this, the Everton game, we'd only picked up 7 points out of the last 15 with a win and four draws. And the naysayers were saying City were off their best and would struggle to reassert themselves in the Premier League. But after a convincing win against Everton, in the second half, we believe that we are now back to our best. And all of this, of course, without Erling Haaland. Joining me tonight, we've got three erstwhile City fans of different generations. Welcome to Dave Hodgson. Welcome, Dave.
Good to see you, Spencer.
Welcome to Ian Lees. Welcome, Lizzo.
Yeah, great to see you, Spencer.
And my son, Anthony Debson. Welcome back, Anthony.
Hi, great to see you, Dad.
So let's kick off, shall we? We are now club world champions. Dave, kick us off. How does it feel?
Well, it's great, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's a trophy we never won before. It's, you know, it probably has a nicer ring to it than it has sort of significance in terms of what it showed about us. I think it's, you know, it's a sort of cross, you know, crossing the T's, dotting the I's on the dominance we saw towards the end of last season when we, you know, when we took the Champions League. But, you know, it's a nice to have. I think it's, you know, it probably underlines to the extent that it needed underlining that, you know, how strong the European sides are versus everyone else. And you kind of felt that we weren't really tested at any given point. But, you know, it's a slightly difficult environment, you know, very, very, very warm, 30-degree heat to play in. And, you know, we did the job convincingly. And, you know, it was clearly something that Pep really wanted us to go out and get. It seems to mean a lot to the players. So, you know, being able to say champions of the world is pretty sweet, really.
Lizzo, do you agree? Does it matter?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it just gives an indication of where the club are going now. Pep has obviously won these trophies before with other clubs, but I think it's just something that he wanted to drive forward with this particular club. And obviously the owners and ourselves just want to see this expand. It'll be just interesting to see what we can win next, to be honest with you, where we go with this.
I mean, I think that the importance of this can be somewhat understated because, of course, if you're not in it, it becomes an irrelevance. But once you've actually won it, perhaps it's this is the start point of City truly being accepted globally into the world's top table. Anthony, what's your take on it?
Well, no, exactly. I think around Asia, South America, the Club World Cup is actually a really big deal. And it's the first time we've won it, of course, so we're going to expand our footprint. And then on a personal level, really thrilled to say that Man City is the only club in the world with a football player who is both country and domestic world champions in Julian Alvarez.
Of course. I mean, there was a nice piece on him, I think, in the Times and elsewhere, that at the age of 23, he's won everything there is to win in the game. But I really liked his reaction, which was very sort of matter of fact, wasn't it? It was about this is just the beginning and of his career and so on. And also, let's, I mean, focus a little bit on Pep's reaction and what we thought of that. What did we think of that? I mean, it was sort of, let's we go again. I don't know, you know, Dave, what's your thinking around Pep and his, you know, has he lost his motivation? Is he evergreen? You know, how does he feel?
I think there's two things. I think number one, it's clear that he's hungry as ever. I mean, you only have to watch him on the touchline. You know, he was pretty animated last night, and he was you know, certainly been animated through our last few performances, whether they were the good ones or the bad ones. You know, I don't think anyone would doubt for a second that he's every bit as hungry as he was, you know, a few years back. I suppose the interesting thing is he going to be hungry for all that success with us over a longer period of time? You know, is that where he sees his future? I think the indications are yes. You know, that he's been saying he wants to stay as long as he can, really, as long as the club will keep him. And, you know, as it stands, I think he's probably looking to be here longer than his contract is my sense from, you know, the way he seems to be talking about stuff at the moment. And, you know, I think that's the thing there is, you know, there's some big transitions that are coming in the next few years of, you know, key players like Walker and De Bruyne are dropping off. So he has work to do if he wants to keep this this level of dominance up. But in turn, there's no club on earth where I think he will find himself as supported, both financially and sort of in terms of, you know, the backing of the board that he has at City. And I think he knows that. I think he looks at this and goes, you know, I'm winning everything here. I can win even more. You know, this is the best place to do it. So I think he's as hungry as he's ever been. And I think he's hungry to do more with us, which, you know, couldn't be better news, really, for all the City fans.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he is an incredible person, Pep Guardiola. I mean, we've spent many times on the podcast praising him. But what is it, Lizo, do you think, about the inner person that gives him this ability to regenerate and go and go and go again? I think you know him a little bit, or the team.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's an amazing fella. All I can say is, and it's not just about the players, it's around the club as well, even down to, I don't want to use the lower pitch, but it's the cleaner of the changing room. He'll, before he goes home at night, he'll find Deb and he'll give her a thank you. He'll give him a packet of biscuits. And it's that installed in him. Now, whether that's something to do medically, whether it's to do with something that he's been brought up with, I don't know, but long may it go. And I think what we've forgotten to add here is we've been working with the smallest squad in the Premier League. Even without KDB, yeah. We've been working with bare bones of players. And these players are, to a certain degree, mentally tired. But for somehow, Pep will keep them going. And like David pointed out last night, we just won the game 3-1, and he's going to Guardiola, telling what he should have done in the game. Now, again, we've seen that done with Haaland. We've actually seen him do it with opposition players as well. So again, he's just total football. And again, as long as he can do that and keep doing that, and he's with Manchester City, let him keep doing it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, do you think he's going to stay on beyond summer of 25? And I know, you know, we've had a few extensions, but what's your take on
it? Spencer, I think nobody knows that question yet. I think only he knows whether he wants to do that or not. And I think that nobody's really sort of questioned it. He's never really questioned it. He's just got a job to do, and he'll do it. And that's it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think one thing we do know is somewhere along the line there's going to be a statue of Pep Guardiola outside the Etihad.
Because, I think he'll be a gold statue.
Yeah, probably a gold one. You're absolutely right. Now, Anthony, you know, this is this some kind of new normal? I mean, you've only really known sort of success in the City era. Are you impressed with what's happened? And do you think we're at the peak, or are we just at the beginning of a success journey here?
I think we're probably right in the middle of it, as long as Guardiola extends his contract past 2025. Just touching on some of the earlier points, I mean, he was the Barca's pivot before Busquets. So, you know, takes one to make one. And now we have Rodri, who's arguably the best midfielder in the world, you know, even if he's not on electric form as it stands. I mean, you know, we are at, what, five? It'll be, if we had lost this game or not won this game, it would have been his worst single run in 5 years for Man City. And winning was important. And actually, Thierry's reaction at the Club World Cup, you know, beyond happiness, he was probably relieved that they've got a bit of positive momentum going back into the league. And whether or not we agree that the first goal today, the first goal against Newcastle was a foul or not, you know, he, as you said, is probably in the back driving momentum, driving hunger. And, you know, I just hope that he stays at the club as long as possible.
Well, we are all united in that hope. And I mean, we won't sort of focus too much on the game. I mean, it was a convincing sort of 4-0 win against Fluminense. I must say, I don't think they put up too much of a fight. We were just a little bit men v boys there. I don't know if anyone wants to comment on that. But it was a quality performance, and I don't think the result was in doubt. I don't know if you saw it that way, Dave.
I think they were, you know, I certainly started off the game thinking Fluminense were quite a lot of fun. In that, you know, they certainly have some quite interesting, you know, they had quite an interesting approach to try and deal with our press by, you know, dragging us as close to their goal as possible and trying to sort of ticky-tack the way out, whether that was the goalkeeper or, you know, a 36-year-old centre-back or, you know, whoever was wanting to get involved in that, which was kind of quite fun to watch. I don't think it was particularly effective, but it was, again, I always like it when teams come out and at least want to play rather than say, we'll keep it at 0-0 as long as possible. So that was enjoyable. But it did rather turn sour towards the end, and obviously a particularly nasty challenge on Rodri that you know, could have been much worse.
Fortunately, it wasn't.
They did get a bit petulant towards the end, which I think cost some marks. But you know, we did a professional job. We went out there, we showed our class. We're probably more clinical than we've been in recent weeks, where that has been an issue. But you know, it's a very sort of, you know, it's a format of tournament we'll probably never have to play again, given that they're changing the structure of that completely. It is a bit different. You know, there is a bit of figuring out how that works. And, you know, we did a very professional job, you know, in what is, you know, usually a very focused run of, you know, back-to-back Premier League games, to go and do these sort of, you know, quite different training, breaks your cycle up a bit, and do it professionally, I think is, you know, is a real testament to the players. So, yeah, I think it was a, you know, job well done. But, you know, will we have harder tests? Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one thing it seems, sometimes these travel away games at any level become a bind on the travel and the sort of the weariness, and then the regroup before the next game. But by all accounts, it was really quite a bonding trip. And it seemed to be totally positive in terms of sort of camaraderie, as well as the result, and obviously the sort of celebrations around it. I mean, the other thing that struck me as well, that would be interesting in your take, Lizzo, is the whole merchandising gains on the back of this. I mean, I don't know about you, but I got an email within about 10 minutes of the final whistle with all of the offers around merchandising. I mean, perhaps Lizzo, you want to touch on that, is our sort of City's ability to you know, merchandise and monetize around this, around our success.
Well, again, we've not just now become a football club. We're now a global brand, and it's like anything with brands. They're hot on the ball with social media, up to date merchandising, marketing, etc. So it's an opportunity to have a go and tap into the fan base that we have. And if we don't do that, then obviously income streams are a big thing to bring in money to then develop the aspects of the game on the pitch and also off field as well with the extension, etc. So yeah, you're right, we have teams now. And it's funny, I've been talking to somebody today, when we were at Main Road, we counted that we could count on our 49 staff in total, including players. Today globally there must be over 4,000 people dealing with the Manchester City brand. So, yeah, you're right, Spencer. It will be there. We'll keep doing that. And obviously, that'll keep us growing. And obviously, the project is to go this with global. We've got 13 clubs in the City Football Group, of which the training facilities here in the UK are probably the best in the world. And they'll want to develop that in some of the countries that we have the clubs, probably Spain, Japan, etc. So, and again, you need that money and income streams to do that.
Well, we're just pushing on and on, aren't we, with the whole expansion of the group. And of course, one of our group members, Girona, is doing rather well in the Liga at the moment. So, you know, the signs are obviously wonderful for the future. Let's move on to the Everton game. Ant, take us into Everton and how you felt about the team selection, Nunes starting, and your take on the game.
Game of two halves. First half, pretty dry, not that great. Second half, clearly Pep said something in the back room that gave them a little bit of fuel for the fire. Maybe threat of not being picked for the next game or who knows. But really, yeah, game of two halves. Team selection-wise, we saw Matheus Nunes come in, Jack Grealish started, Foden was there and he's kind of been the mainstay while Katie Bean's been out. Rodri saw Stones come back in and then almost get stretched off as well. I thought that for the criticism, Jack Grealish was very good over this game. He had a few good chances, almost toe-poked in a goal, created one as well, I believe. And then, of course, Foden rifled in that low-driven shot in the second half to really, really seal the win for us. I know that I talk with Dad quite a lot about how I don't think Foden has really progressed as a player much. And actually, he's had a stint now in this team while Kevin's been out to prove his worth. And I don't think on the whole I've seen it, but this Newcastle game was absolutely a step in the right direction for him.
Everton.
Everton. Yeah. Why is it Newcastle? God. Oh, God.
Right. Dave, take us into the game and give us your take on what happened against Everton.
So, I mean, I thought we started all right. You know, it was actually quite. I went to the game and I thought the ground felt very flat at the start. You know, it did feel like I thought Everton would be up for it. You know, first minute, right onto us. But we seemed to get pretty settled into our pattern of possession. Probably didn't create all that much for it, apart from a pretty good chance that Nunes managed to squander. You know, I don't think we were. You know, we looked like we were. You know, not at our absolute best, but you know, comfortably on top. Then, you know, we made a succession of mistakes. So Bernardo loses the ball, Rodri loses the ball, and you know, we're kind of all at sea for their first goal. Came against run of play and it knocked us. And
I think that was conceived that really, wasn't it? Really
poor. It's one of those goals that's very difficult to like say, oh, we need to change that this time. You know, those mistakes do happen. I think the bit that concerned me more was our response to that in the immediate aftermath. You know, Akanji was really struggling to get into possession and to maintain possession. Nunes was trying stuff that just wasn't quite coming off, taking too many touches. You know, I don't particularly want to single out specific players there, but it really felt like we sort of limped, literally in Stone's case, into half time. And, you know, we did not see any likelihood of a fight back if we carried on in that vein. But, you know, props to Pep. You know, change things up well at half-time, you know, sort of reshape the back four with Stones out. Akanji had a much better second half in Stones' role, was able to move the ball forward a lot better. I thought Kovacic came on and was fantastic when we went 2-1 up. But, you know, we really good goal from Foden. It was definitely, I think the problem we had was, whilst we did start the second half very well, we were very ponderous and it took something to break the momentum that, you know, Everton were very happy to sit back and defend. And it took something that no one was really expecting from Foden, you know, first time shots, very crisp, you know, Pickford clearly wasn't set for it. And then after that, really, we created much better. We looked very good. I mean, for me, it was a Stonewall penalty. Got the penalty, converted well. And from there, we actually looked pretty, pretty confident going into the end of it. So, yeah, I think the second half was probably the best we've played in this difficult run. I think it was nice to see that, you know, the changes up have been made. We look better in our transitions, and Foden unchained is a bit of a you know, a bit of a dangerous thing for any opposition player. And, you know, it makes us miss Kevin De Bruyne that little bit less when he's able to go out and have that creative license around the, you know, around the final third. So, yeah, I came away feeling very, very positive about the whole thing and thought the way we turned that around second half and the mentality that showed, as well as the individual brilliance from players like Foden and Grealish, as Anthony mentioned, you know, it was just a very good second half performance and job well done.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? We've managed to get leads in games in recent times and then give those leads away, if you like. And this time, you know, we fell behind. We'd really dominated the play, I felt, in the first half. I mean, was the performance that bad? I'm not sure it was, but we went in behind at half time. And Lisa, I mean, how did you feel, you know, as we went into the break, given our recent form, and, you know, and how did you rate the second half performance, and, you know, what players caught your eye?
It's quite interesting that my feelings when we went 1-0 down was, okay, fine, we went 1-0 down, we'll score three, we'll score four. That is the different attitude as a City fan you have now, where 15, 20 years ago, if we went 1-0 down, we'd go, oh dear, what's this going to be like? Now under Pep, 2-0 down? Yeah, don't bother, we'll come back 4-2. 3-0 down? Yeah, we'll come back 4-3. And so I had...
We haven't recently been doing that, have we? We've been managing to draw games we should have won, you know. So what's... Yeah.
True, but again, we're only halfway through the season. You know, we're not even on our best run, you know, because our best run is always after Christmas anyhow. And we've had a lot more games. We've played a lot more games than Everton so far this season. Everton's I think we don't give Everton credit enough. I thought they came with a plan. A lot of teams.
You're right. I think they were set up really well, actually.
Yeah. A lot of teams now come with this plan where they'll sit behind the ball, 5-6 at the back, close the spaces down so we can't get through them. And then hopefully we make a mistake, they score. And then, but they tire. If you notice in the second half, when you play that system, they tire. And that's when Pep, you know, you say Nunes didn't do a good job. I thought he did a great job, Mateus Nunes. He tired the back four out. He kept them working, kept them going. A lot of criticism has a go at Jack where he just gets the ball and passes it back. He does it for a reason, because he draws two defenders to him, leaving a gap at the side. And if you notice, he cuts across them and then passes it to Rodri or to Foden. And the shot from Foden didn't surprise me at all. He can hit a ball at 129 miles an hour. And so that didn't surprise me one little bit. And we just wear them down. We did that in the Club Cup. You know, they were a good side.
What cup? Did we win the World Cup, Lizzo?
Oh, sorry. Well, that's the next one. We'll put Argentina and England. We'll put Man City.
We probably would be. I won't wear as a club team. Yeah, gotcha.
So again, you know, I think sometimes we can be too critical of the players. The players have got a job to do. They'll do what Pep tells them to do. And it works every time. You know, and they brought Kovacic on because Nunes had done his job, and Kovacic has that little armory where he can nip through the back four, the in between. He has that, and he can play, and then that ties them out even more. So I think, no, City did a great job. It's just one of them. And try it yourselves. If you play football and you can't get the ball, you get very frustrated. Because you can't get the ball. And that is what City do. They wear the opposing team down mentally as well as physically. And it's great to watch. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And I thought we executed it really well in the second half against Everton. I mean, Ant, we've spoken a little bit about the players that perform well. But who were the sort of two, three standouts for you in the game? And, you know, how are they progressing as the season goes by? You know, are we coming into form now to go forward, or was this just sort of a bit of a one-off good performance? What's your take on it?
Oh no, I think every player has a job to do within that team, and I know I'm sitting on the fence, Spencer. No, I am. I'm
sitting. You're on not the allowed fence. To sit on the fence on this podcast, you know. I'm going to ask Anthony. Anthony's going to give us a proper answer to a sensible question there now.
You see, you're getting yourself like Nigel now.
Anthony, what's your take on it?
All right, so my top three, Foden, Grealish, Bernardo. I thought were the standouts for the game. As you mentioned, Nunes had a good game. Kovacic came on, had a good game. Thought Ake had a good game second half, etc. But really, you know, in terms of progression, Grealish, shaky start to season, has not been on form in recent weeks, although he's hitting a bit of a purple patch now. Everyone was like, Doku or Grealish, he's going to have to step up. I know that Doku's injured, but injury is opportunity for players competing for position, and I thought he had a really good showing. Yeah, sure, he turned and faced our goal a little bit too much, in my opinion, but you know, his impact when he got the ball was good, always drawing the foul, always making sure that he was a total nuisance for the Everton defence. Foden, once he got confidence that he scored a belter, he looked like a world beater. But once he got confidence, and then Bernardo, because he was absolutely everywhere on the pitch. I mean, I made a mental note that I caught him picking the ball up at left back, centre mid, left wing, right centre mid and right wing, his default position. And of course, he scored quite a difficult open net as well. So if there ever is like a way to say a difficult open net, that I would think that would be the goal to score. So those are my top three picks from this week.
Okay, lovely. I mean, Dave, it's interesting, isn't it? We've done all of this. I mean, for me, Alvarez is really come back into form at the right time and is looking really good. And a number of players seem to come back in that game. We've done all of this without Erling Haaland, haven't we, of course? You know, how do you see the impact of Haaland coming back, as he inevitably will, in impacting on our sort of future game performances off the back of what we've been doing recently?
Well, yeah, I'd certainly agree that Alvarez has been, I mean, he's been one of our standout performers this year. He gives us something a bit different to different from Haaland, and you know, playing off Haaland, he's added something as well. I think, you know, it's a natural thing that for Haaland, you know, playing with Kevin De Bruyne versus playing without Kevin De Bruyne, you're going to be less effective. You've probably got the best, you know, provider of assists in European football for the last few years. I mean, I saw some stats today that suggested that since, I think, the start of 2016, Kevin De Bruyne has created 200 more chances than anyone else in the Premier League.
Incredible. Yeah,
it is. Pascal Gross is second, I believe. Yeah, it's a huge distance of what of the number of chances that are created by Kevin De Bruyne. And, you know, I think we've noticed this season there have been games where, I mean, he's not always been his most clinical, but he's, you know, getting less chances because we don't have the, you know, the sort of single force of nature that is Kevin De Bruyne. But, you know, Haaland's return probably coincides with De Bruyne's return. And, you know, I think that's going to give us a lot more impetus as well. So, you know, I do hope for Alvarez's sake that he still gets a decent amount of game time. And in turn, I'd like to see maybe us be able to rest Haaland that little bit more, so we're not putting him under too much pressure to stay fit and in turn, the increased risk of injury that comes with that. But you know, I'm excited to have Haaland, Doku, and De Bruyne are all back, and then we can see Pep experiment a little bit more with exactly how he wants to, you know, how he wants to set our attack up for different games. You know, it gives him options for if he wants that more vertical approach. You know, there are games where he might not want that, and you know, playing your Grealishes and your Alvarez, your Foden, you know, that allows us to be a little bit more patient in possession. You know, it'll be interesting to see how he adapts to, you know, well, adapts how he can manage with, you know, these wider range of options, which you would hope allow for us to get a bit of momentum going into the end of the season. But you know, a performance like that with some of the players missing, I was very impressed. And, you know, hopefully we see going from strength to strength now as we start to get the full very thin but full squad back.
Well, I agree. Let's take a minute break, and when we come back, we'll come to talk about the upcoming games, the upcoming fixtures, and perhaps a few predictions for 2024. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. Let's move to some predictions. We're now a few days off the year end. We're coming up to the turn of the season, really, where after the international break we get to it and we get to the business end of the season, both in the Premier League, of course, FA Cup, we've got an upcoming game, and the Champions League. Let's have an open thought process around two things, really. One, is where do we think we're going to progress in these competitions in the next 6 months? And secondly, what sort of signings might we look to make, if any, and in the transfer window? Let's talk about maybe performance first and what our aspirations are. Lisa, kick us off. What do you think we are capable of, and what do you think we would be sort of happy with in 2020?
We're talking about this Manchester City side, and I think we're capable of doing the five trophies again, even six, to be honest with you. Realistically, I don't know. We're such on a crest of a wave now. Anything can happen with this team. I think we've got the capability to win the Champions League again, without a doubt. I think we're still the best in Europe for that. Premier League, you never say no. You know, we were 8 points adrift of Arsenal last season, and we went on to secure it. FA Cup's always been a good one for us, so that's a good one as well. So, five trophies again. That's what I'd like to say.
You are the podcast's resident optimist, Lizzo. It has to be.
Yeah, I know. But again, you know, it's one of them that we're in uncharted waters now. We've never done, as City fans, especially you and I fans, we're probably the oldest here, we've never seen things like this before. So, you know, we won't probably see it again, but the thing is, why we've got it, let's run with it. You know, we just don't know, to be honest with you. But
what's our number one priority for you, Lizzo?
I would say the Champions League.
Okay. Anthony, come on, give us your take. You're our resident Gen Z. What do you think we're capable of? I know we're capable of a lot, but what do you think we can reasonably go for, and what's the priorities?
I'm probably just as much an optimist, to be honest. I think you know, the bookies have us as favourite, and in my mind, I agree with the bookies.
But for everything?
Yeah, we're still the favourites. I mean, every year we go on a crazy run post-Christmas. We always do. We become a well-oiled manic machine. The signings that have taken the season settle in become unplayable, and we strike fear into the hearts of all opponents. Champions League was always our Achilles heel, and we never looked like we had the confidence to win it until we won it, right? We always looked like we had the squad with the ability in the league, but then come facing these international opponents, we just looked like we were too nervous and we couldn't win it. But now we've won it, that should, you know, not be a thing. And then, of course, the domestic cups, give or take, we win one or both each year. So, you know, I don't see any particular reason to think that, despite this run of form that we've had recently, the foundations are caving in. So, you know, forever an optimist. I'm with you, Lizzo.
Thanks, Anthony.
Dave, is this just a sort of a routine over-optimism born of even potentially complacency, or are we justified in what we're saying here?
I don't think I'm going to be quite as positive, but I think, you know, there's certainly... I think we win the league, and I think we win the league with a considerably lower point tally than in previous seasons. It feels like the margins for error are quite a lot bigger this year. I still think Arsenal are missing something in terms of, you know, maybe the leadership to drag them through. Liverpool, I still think, have a bit of a soft centre in midfield, and I think almost, you know, though I think those challenges will fall away, but I do think it's going to be tighter. I think we, you know, I do think we just have the edge to win that. I think we've got a, you know, usually get a decent run of form together, and then everything starts to come from that league form. So I think us winning the league is kind of, it should always be the priority. I think we've probably got everything there to do that. And of course, no team has retained it four in a row.
No, that's right. That would be another first.
Would be a nice incentive for us. But, you know, in turn, you know, I do think one of the things that has been very, very key to our run-ins in previous seasons has been Gundogan. I think he's probably been the key player for us in the last two or three run-ins. I think he will be a very big miss at the tail end of the season, because when he hit form, he often dragged us through a few games. And I think, you know, hopefully someone steps up, but I think that's going to be a miss for us. Champions League, I mean... us, Bayern, Real all look very strong. I think, you know, any of those could be, you know, any of those could win it. I think probably our squad is just on balance a little bit weaker than last year. And we probably struggle I personally think we'll at least get to the semis, but you know, there it almost becomes a little bit of a lottery, and there are other sides who I would say could very easily beat us. And then domestic cups, it's really a bit of a toss up of who you get at what time. You know, if you, as I think we found with the League Cup, if you get drawn away at Newcastle and you know how hungry they are for a trophy, you know, there's some difficult ties that you can get along there, and you know, I think that's that may well be a distant third priority as we try to you know, get the elusive fourth Premier League title, you know, top division title that no one's done before, and retain the Champions League. You know, those two things are going to be weighing more on our minds. So I find it quite difficult to see us doing anything in the retaining the FA Cup. So I suppose, you know, the short version, I think we win the league. It's a toss up on the Champions League. I think we at least get to the semis, and FA Cup, I don't think we're keeping that one.
I mean, you know, all of this to Liso's point before, with the smallest squad in the Premier League, and I suppose, you know, will that catch us out potentially with injuries and so on? And do we actually need to make any more signings, you know, squad based signings in January? What's our views on that? Anthony,
can I just make one point, Spencer, which we've not alluded to? In these finals as well, we've introduced academy players. Hamilton came up as though he had never come out of the first team before. He actually
hadn't even heard of him when he got into that squad, had we?
Yeah, and also we've had Oscar Bob, and also then the latest one came in, and I can't pronounce his name, so I don't want to disrespect him. So again, our academy is doing very, very well with players. And so do we need to buy anybody? From past history, I think signing players for Pep in January has been quite a small thing to do. I think he's only bought Emerick Laporte and brought him straight in. When we bought Alvarez in January, didn't come back until...
It was loaned back, wasn't he?
Yeah. And I think there's a possibility, from what I've read with Sky Sports today, there's a possibility we've got another Argentine player doing that from River Plate. So do we need one? Pep doesn't like to work, as we know, with big squads. So is there enough there? Is KDB coming back okay? Haaland coming back? We've done okay. And if you look at the table, we're not that bad for Premier League where we are. You know, we only lost six games last season, where we've lost only three this season. So I think we're in good stead with the squad. I don't think we really need to buy anybody unless, you know, the likes of possibly Calvin might move on, etc.
Anthony, what's your take on it? Because do you think we need to sign people, or do you think we're good as we are? And what do you think about all these players that have got to come back? Of course, KDB being the main one.
So I think we've spoken quite a few times on this, right? That I've got a sneaking suspicion that, you know, the management at Man City are kind of telling Guardiola that in a number of years' time, we want to have the majority of our squad being, you know, academy grads. We've already got Rico Lewis and Phil Foden, who are regulars in the first team. We've got Oscar Bob, Hamilton, Soho, who's on the bench against Palace, and many other really good ones. And also each year for FFP, we're unloading six or seven players that we've never heard of, slash never played for us, for net 50, 60, 70 million pounds. So, you know, clearly the academy is working well for us. And I'm really excited to see some of these new players coming through and being good. I mean, we've got the two best Norwegian strikers in the world in Haaland and Bob. I'm gonna go that far. In terms of if I had to play devil's advocate and pick one position, I am not sure this whole centre-back at left-back thing is really panning out. I mean, we see Guardiola, Stones, Ake there, but none has really been a direct fit or nearly as good as when we had João Cancelo on that left-hand side. And I think, you know, tactically, that's a little bit of a weakness of ours. So if I had to pick a player, I'd pick a world-class left-back, maybe an Alphonso Davies, if I'm being optimistic. But unlikely, I know.
Dave, what do you think? Do we need to sign a proper left back, or do we make do?
I think we've needed to sign a proper left back for as long as I've been a City fan. I can't really think of a point where there's that.
Still on three titles on the trot without one.
But indeed, I mean, you know, look, we've always found ways around it. You know, we've either, you know, had Cancelo, who was not a left back but played there. We've had, you know, Ake filling in, who will probably say he's a centre back. Guardiola now. I think the bit we sort of lose here is the sort of tactical flexibility of, you know, having an out left back who we can use in certain games. And I know Gomez is there. Gomez also, you could ask questions whether he's actually a left back. You know, he certainly played, you know, I think right wing in previous clubs. And, you know, I think just there's a certain tactical flexibility that we can give ourselves that may, you know, may release Grealish a little bit more if he feels there's a more secure, more natural left back there. I think the other one that sort of jumps out at me is something we might need is, you know, if Phillips has been, with all best intentions, has been a bit of a disaster. You know, he's going to be moving on. It's fairly clear that the last, you know, the sort of final piece of that was him agreeing to move on. Looks like that's what's happening. You know, all the best to him, but it's just not worked out. But, you know, he did come in for a very key need that if Rodri is in trouble, we need cover in that position. You know, we've got players who can fill in there at a pinch. Maybe Rico Lewis is going to take that role if no one's up in January. But I do think having a more natural holding midfield, you know, maybe a younger player who can sort of back up Rodri a bit more effectively is pretty important. And we do find that, you know, a couple of injuries, we could find ourselves looking very threadbare in the position that probably defines our play most of all. So, again, it's the classic thing. Pep will not do anything if he doesn't think the right target's out there. But, you know, I would be looking at, if Calvin Phillips goes, we replace him. And, you know, if there is a decent left-back option, I've heard this young player, Mattson, who was on loan at Burnley and at Chelsea, has been linked with us, you know, as a sort of, not a starter, but a player who can fit in that position. You know, I think that will give us something a little bit extra that allows Pep that extra tactical flexibility for certain games.
Listen, that'd be certainly really interesting to see as the years go by, and then also in the post-Pep era, whether the academy players come through to the first team and whether we do indeed have, you know, more than one or two, you know, in there, because it's certainly not been the model of the last sort of decade. Time will tell. Let's see. Let's talk about the fixtures then. We've got an upcoming game against Sheffield United at home. Anthony, are you feeling confident about this? Sheffield have not been covering themselves in glory lately. Your grandfather's team, I believe.
You will smash them. Yeah, very confident in Sheffield. They've been woeful this season. I'll just give you that. They've been.
If your grandfather's listening to this, I apologise for the sort of finality of his comment. But I think that comes from a confidence and expectation, I think. Lisa, how do you feel about Sheffield, the game against Sheffield?
Great little club. Obviously got Chris Wilder back, so it'll be a totally different setup on Saturday than it was at the start of the season. So, but again, we'll be prepared for the game. And, you know, it's at home, 54,000 people behind the team. You know, why not another win?
Dave, score prediction and any comments on Sheffield?
You know, Paul, yeah, I really felt for Paul Heckingbottom, their previous manager. Like, you know, the cards were so stacked against him when he came up, had to sell two of the best players. You know, poor contract management on the part of Sheffield United as well. You know, very difficult job. That's one of the weaker squads in the league. We really should be doing a number on them. You'd hope it's four or five, but, you know, they've got that new manager bounce. You know, I take any win.
Yeah, sure.
And bearing in mind, Spencer, James McAtee, one of their best players, can't play.
That's true. Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, himself and Tommy Doyle were mainstays in their promotion run, weren't they? Yeah. And going back. And then we've got Huddersfield again on the 7th of January. I mean, it'll be another podcast before that. But again, FA Cup game at home against Huddersfield. I think predictably we would all be feeling very confident in that game. Anthony?
Yeah, hopefully we'll get our first clean sheet in what feels like ages now.
I mean, do you think we would be playing, you know, playing some of the academy players and some of the younger ones in that game, or do you think Pep will stay, you know, largely with the main players?
I would absolutely love to see Hamilton play again. I thought he looked so good when he last played, and Oscar Bob as well, and also this centre midfielder Susoho as well. I think in the last podcast I was in, I called that we'd see more of the academy players. I can't remember what the fixture we were talking about it was. And that was, of course, the game that Hamilton shows. And it was a cup game. I know it was a Champions League group stage game. which
it was against Leipzig, I think. Yeah, the sort of the so-called dead rubber game. Yeah.
And I think he'll kind of treat it a little bit as experimenting with some of the young players, and hopefully we see some more diamonds in the rough, at least show themselves and make themselves target for buyers in the summer as well.
Dave, who would you like to give a run out in the next couple of games?
I think I'll repeat those. It'd be good to get some of the bench players who've maybe played a bit less. I don't know if Gomez is fit, but it'd be players who've maybe seen a little bit less of less of first team action. It's a chance to get them involved. You don't want to do too many changes, and I know Pep's not a fan of doing sort of 8, 9, 10 changes. He'll probably look to do 5 or 6 just to keep some continuity. One player I've been wondering whether he gets a bit of a run out is Joel Ndala from the academy side. 17-year-old explosive winger. Looks a real prospect as well. So he's one I'd be quite interested to see a bit more, but he's not really been, probably as a result, probably down to his age, in the contention with the first team at this point. But, I think we've always, there's always a line of get these players experience, but also we want to show adequate respect to Huddersfield and use the chance to get some maybe senior players who've had fewer minutes a bit more of a chance to.
Absolutely. Lisa, any closing comments before we head off for our Christmas?
I'd like to see another 10-1.
Another 10-1?
Yeah. Last time we played Huddersfield, we beat them 10-1. 3 hat-tricks, all scored by City players, and their goal was scored by the next City player as well.
Well, that's an excellent way to wrap up the podcast. From Lisa's lips, absolutely. Well, welcome, sir. Thanks, everyone. It has been fantastic to have you with us. And thanks to Dave, thanks to Ian, and thanks to Anthony. And we'll join you again next time on The Man City Show.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.